If you haven't played Paddy Power Fantasy yet, you're missing out. But on the upside, if you haven't played it yet, you qualify for a risk-free first go. Get up to £20 back as cash when you play Paddy Power Fantasy. And because every NFL game day is a season in itself, you don't have to wait to find out if you've won. Paddy Power Fantasy. Hate waiting, love winning. New customer offer, min £5, max £20 refund. T's and C's apply. Paddy Power Fantasy rules apply. 18 plus begambleaware.org.
Hello and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show, presented by Paddy Power Fantasy. Iron Mike in a mo. We'll talk Monday Night Football with him. That Bears defense getting it done once again. Turnover mayhem in that one, as it was all weekend long in the NFL. We will ask Mike why that is. We'll talk about the clock management situation as well, which is rearing its head once again. A few coaches under fire, including Pete Carroll of the Seahawks, making a baffling decision. I wasn't the only coach that did that at the weekend. So we'll get into all of that. Good mailbag as well. So Mike to come shortly. We're going to check in with our college expert, Ben Isaacs, too, for all the big stories from the NCAA. And we've got a special guest, travel expert Ben Mortimer, joining us a little bit later on. For all of you out there planning a trip stateside to watch a college game, an NFL game, any sporting game for that matter, Ben is your man. So some tips and pointers for you if you're planning a big trip over. You should be thinking about it if you can. Now, if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to us on your podcatcher of choice. We're on social media as well, at the NC Show. And wherever you listen to us, if you've got time, go and leave us a review. Helps us out. All good on that front. Big shout out to our sponsors as well. Paddy Power Fantasy, great to have their support this season. Get stuck in with Daily Fantasy if you haven't already. That's the name of the game. We've got a Daily Fantasy pod, of course, with me and the OG. That drops every Saturday. We'll get you in the mood for that. Lots of good stuff over on Paddy Power Fantasy. Fantasy.paddypower.com. A lot of competitions, all kinds of good stuff there. So get involved. Right then, let's get the show on the road. And I'm Mike. Hey, Mike. So first things first, just to reassure me and our listeners at home, since we last spoke, since we last had you on the show on Wednesday, because of course Wednesday is the Carlton show, you haven't taken a ball to the face like Pete Carroll did at the weekend, have you?
No, I've done that once in my career, and I don't think I'm ever going to do it again if I can avoid it. Although, in fairness, his was before the game and mine was after. So,
right. We are talking about the basketballs around the commentary booth, right?
That's true. And it wasn't it was literally after the game, an Argentine player, they had just beaten Brazil, and Pablo Prigioni kicked the ball into the stands. I was turned around facing John Amici, and the audio obviously is up on BBC. It was the fourth most popular clip on BBC Sport in 2012. And I ask him a question, and just before he starts to answer, he goes, uh-oh. And as soon as he says, uh-oh, the ball slams into my headset, into my right ear. And I go, ow. And then I said, what's happened? I look around, and the ball had bounced off my head and into the press area below us. And I said, quote, some idiots in the press area.
Some idiot.
Our basketball around.
The commentary booth.
Right, exactly. You've heard it a million times. And
my ringtone, Mike, to be fair.
And John said, no, it came from the court. And I said, oh, and then proceeded to continue the interview with him. So I thought this was quite good. And someone from the BBC called and said, about 10 minutes later, and said, do you mind if we use that audio on the website? I said, is it embarrassing for me? And they, oh, no, not at all.
No.
So I said, sure, go ahead. And the next thing you know, millions of people are laughing at me all over the world.
Went global. It is great. There will be many, many different options for your autobiography, Mike, but it came from the court. I expect to be at least on the shortlist. Now, listen, Cody Barton was the rookie linebacker who was unwittingly responsible for the Pete Carroll ball to the kisser. Is he still on the roster? Have we checked?
Yeah, I think so. The question is whether the butterflies. Why do they call them butterfly stitches? They don't look like butterfly to me, especially when they're on Pete Carroll's nose.
Now we got a ton to get into. Let's start with Monday Night Football.
Well, hold it. Before we do, there's only one story that you have to start with, and I know that you've probably got other priorities, but any serious football person, there can only be one question today.
Oh gosh!
And it has two possible answers. Is Daniel Jones elite, or is he a lock for the Hall of Fame? I mean, really, we need to decide this now.
I think we do. I mean, one start, I think there's more than enough of a sample size to get into that. Like Bill Simmons was talking about the fact that his name went from Danny Dimes just to Dimes over the weekend. He's just getting more and more.
That's good. I remember Nick Holling telling me that he was in a locker room somewhere, and I think it was a preseason game, and Billy White Shoes Johnson was on the visiting team. And when he went into the visiting team locker room where they just put up like tape with the players' names on it for the lockers, one locker just had shoes written on it.
Brilliant. Well, okay. Much as maybe we'll talk a bit of Danny Dimes later.
Yeah, but no. Continue on to what you want.
In the mailbag, Iron Mike, I think we might have a Danny Dimes question just to keep you, just to placate you and keep you happy. So we'll get to the mailbag in a bit. But I want to start with Monday Night Football. And those Chicago Bears, and specifically the Chicago Bears defense, getting it done once again. Five takeaways as they roll the Skins, 31-15 the final. So the Bears move to 2-1. Washington say goodnight, Gracie, to them at 0-3. And it's interesting. So within that game, Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, who incidentally, Mike, is what, seventh in the NFL best named player power rankings, still holding his own.
Ha-Ha is great. Is still a great rolling. Name. And remember, he was playing in Washington last year.
Former skid, of course he was. Yeah. Returned, had a pick six, of course, in this one. The Bears now, when that went in, the Bears have now seven defensive touchdowns since 2018. The defense carrying this team on both sides of the ball right now.
Yeah, and that was the case last season as well. And there are still, I think, a lot of questions out there about Mitch Trubisky and how efficient he is, even though his line was pretty good. I mean, you know, when you look at it, you still see errant throws and some bad decisions along the way, and you wonder how long this model can continue. One, and the problem, of course, is once you get to play teams with better offensive lines and better offenses, because if you go down 28-3 to the Bears in the first half, the second half is meat for them. You know, they can just keep you pinned down, get a couple of turnovers if you're really struggling. And of course, they didn't really have Washington didn't really have a downfield answer against that Bears defense. Now, there are a couple of problems for them up front, because Akeem Hicks, who, you know, might be the most underrated player in the league now. I'm not sure if it's still true that he's underrated.
Yes.
But he's a really great defensive end. Now, he hurt his knee, and Bilal Nichols, the other defensive end, hurt his hand. I don't know what the update is on those injuries right now, but that would be major loss for them, because although the pass rush comes from Khalil Mack, and Danny Trevathan had a great game, and as you said, Ha-Ha and the secondary played really well. And of course, when you've got Jackson back there, you know, in the secondary, he's the closest thing to Earl Thomas that we've got.
Right.
That pretty much says that the Bears should continue to play well, even if they lose to their starting defensive linemen, at least temporarily. But against a top-flight offense.
On that, sorry, Mike, just on Akeem Hicks, you posed the question. Being reported by Chicago media, it's minor, his injury, so nothing.
Yeah, well, that's good news for them, because that's what, you know, that's what it's all based on. Chuck Pagano came in and kept the basic 3-4 format that they were using under Vin Fangio. I think he's a little more aggressive in terms of bringing extra pass rushers, but, you know, with the talent they have, they don't necessarily need to. Akeem Hicks spent 1 year in New England, you know, as a free agent between New Orleans and Chicago.
Right.
And if you think about him, what he does now is kind of what Richard Seymour used to do for the Patriots. A 3-4 lineman who can occupy two blockers, who can move inside on pass rush if he has to, and can be a one-on-one rusher occasionally. And
versatility,
you know,
is the name.
Exactly.
Of the game.
Exactly.
I was a little bit remiss, Mike, to be fair, because, saying the defense is carrying both sides of the ball. Taylor Gabriel literally carrying the Bears offense. Great game. Three touchdowns for him. And then exited with a concussion. So he could be doubtful next time around because of that, depending on how the protocol goes for him. But yeah, good game. What do you make of Taylor Gabriel?
Well, he is what he has been, and what Matt Nagy's trying to do is to use him as that top layer. When you think in terms, I've been referring to this a lot in the past week. When you think in terms of an Andy Reid kind of offense where you get these layered pass routes with a deep threat, the Tyreek Hill, say, with the tight ends cutting across, and that's where Chicago right now hasn't been able to generate too much from their tight ends. And another receiver in the middle zone, that's Allen Robinson normally, and a back coming out of the backfield. You know, when things are working, that's what that's what that offense should do. And Gabriel, if you can get to him on the third level, say, is a great threat. But it relies on guys like Allen Robinson, you know, doing their job. The interesting quote from Nagy that I saw was, we've got to figure out a way to use Cordarrelle Patterson's talents. You know, he played carrying the ball again, just a few carries. But, you know, if you're going to sign
every head coach ever, right?
You would have thought if you're going to sign him to a big money deal like they did, that you would have an idea.
You'd have the plan already worked out.
That's why I was scratching my head at it. But, you know, if they can do that, he's the kind of, you know, he's never been a consistent receiver, but he's the kind of guy who can stretch defenses on a bunch of levels. And I would be trying him at a lot of those kind of routes that they use Trey Burton on, say, tight end in motion, tight end from the slot. You know, he's big enough to line up in that position and have teams have to account for him as a tight end. That would be my first thought, but then I'm not a coach.
Interesting idea. And Burton, of course, has been banged up at the start of the season, starting to get back to full fitness, and it figured more against the Redskins. So that will help things, I think, because there are a lot of high hopes for him this season.
So
just a quick line, Mike, on the Redskins. Two elements to the Redskins situation at the moment. As I said at the top, they've fallen to 0-3. So predictably, Jay Gruden, the head coach, on the hot seat to one of those coaches that everybody is, the vultures are circling around, but also they're similarly, Case Keenum under pressure, the journeyman quarterback they've got, who's not great, not bad, just does what Case Keenum does, but they have a young gun in Dwayne Haskins sitting, waiting patiently. So do you think Gruden's days are numbered, and do you think we're going to see Dwayne Haskins sooner rather than later?
Yeah, I thought Gruden's days were numbered before the season started. I think I said that on our preseason podcast. He would be the most likely coach, the first likely firing. I think there's a problem. And now the problem is too that, you know, Adrian Peterson is back as their number one back because Darius is gone.
Yeah.
And without that running threat, because AP doesn't look like AP did last year, when he looked like a legitimate number one, without that running threat, it takes away an element from, what Gruden wants to do offensively. And Keenum, you know, his best year arguably was with the Vikings, where he was the second, you know, where passing was the second choice on that team. Mike Zimmer would prefer to run the ball a lot and then play off play action. Mm. And that would pretty much be Case Keenum's strength. And what you're going to get is when Case Keenum has to be a totally passing quarterback because you're behind and has to do a lot of pocket throwing and downfield, is you're always going to get some mistakes, you know, particularly against a really good defense.
And, yeah, that's a really good point. It figures that his best season ever was on a, you know, potentially championship winning Vikings team, right? Because he wasn't necessarily in that spot as much. It's interesting,
you know, and I think you said we know what we're going to get from Case Keenum. You know, that's not a question. He's kind of like, or maybe in 6 years he'll be Ryan Fitzpatrick. Okay. You know, it's that kind of thing where you might get a real boost or you might not.
Brutal
I don't
bust.
Know what they do. You know, he doesn't seem to want to move to Dwayne Haskins.
No.
And you can understand that perhaps.
I get that. And, you know, we talk Danny Dimes, but I just think that in a situation like this, let him sit for a few weeks, let him learn the game a little bit before you throw him in there, particularly if the team isn't firing on all cylinders. Less swag than Ryan Fitzpatrick, of course.
We all
have less swag than
and Haskins doesn't have the mobility, which with, you know, Trent Williams, and this is a huge part of what Washington's problem is, you know, without Trent Williams at left tackle, there's a real gap in blocking for the quarterback. And so, you know, in a sense, you'd be putting Haskins out in line for a lot of punishment.
Because
not a mobile quarterback. He's a pocket passer.
Now, quick question. I should have probably checked this at the start, Mike. Rufus, for new listeners to the show, of course, Rufus, Mike's faithful canine friend, tends to get quite excited when we mention the JETS, and we're about to do that. So is he in another room, or have we got him? Rufus,
no, he's lying next to me, quite comfortable right now.
All
so
right.
Yeah,
I don't want to ride him too much.
We'll just say JEST.
Okay, we'll say that
saying the word. Yeah,
that other team in New York or Jersey that have fumble recovery against the Patriots was their first touchdown of any kind in Gillette Stadium since 2015, which I thought was a stat you'd appreciate, and indeed Rufus would. Turnovers all the rage, of course, in the NFL. So we mentioned in Monday Night Football, the Bears cashed in. The 49ers overcame 5 to beat the Steelers. Minkah Fitzpatrick, incidentally, getting stuck in, as we predicted he would on the show last week. The Bills, they forced 4 in their win over Cincy. And as I say, even the Pats were susceptible. Jarrett Stidham coming in after they
Brady
called his Jets. So turnovers everywhere, Mike.
We saw how turnovers and you know, special teams plays can simply turn a game around. Right. You know, the Giants game, you know, if Matt Gay doesn't miss the field goal, the Giants lose. And, you know, that was interesting because the field goal was literally an extra point.
The Arians, this is the Bruce Arians call, right? So yeah, we didn't get into that with Greg, on Monday. So really good shout, Mike. So it was a 27 yarder. He took the delay. Coach Arians took the delay of game penalty.
Right.
And the rookie kicker missed the kick, right? So they lost the game. In the presser afterwards, Arians said, I felt it was a better range for him that even though he'd hit a 27 yarder in the game, incidentally. Well, he missed two extra points.
He had missed two extra points. And basically, by moving back seven, he kicked from the 34,
right.
which basically is an extra point.
Yeah.
So by doing that, he put him exactly in the situation where he had missed,
two
kicks already.
And took him from the spot where he made a kick. So I was trying to work this out afterwards, and I didn't know Bruce Arians, one of his kids was a kicker. And Bruce Arians is known as a pretty stand-up guy generally, right? So do you think Arians was just taking a bullet for his rookie in the presser and just said, I did this, I did this. To deflect attention off, off what happened.
I didn't get that either. It wasn't just the 5 yards. Winston took a knee for another 2. To put it on the hash mark that they wanted to kick from. So, I didn't get it because I just don't see why you necessarily want to add yardage to your kicker's burden and but it was a horrible way to lose a game because Winston had, you know, two long passes, 20 to Godwin and I think it was 44 to Mike Evans, which was a brilliant play. You know, they deserved to win that game. But I was thinking too of, the way interceptions, they simply can put you in a hole. Punt return touchdowns, you know, like New Orleans, Seattle, for example.
Right.
They got the fumble, for a TD where, you know, it was, Carson was finally found to be, you know, the ball had popped out and that was returned for a TD.
Another fumble for him as well. That's
looking
good.
And Deontay Harris had that great punt return touchdown. So that's 14 points on the road. And for New Orleans, that made their life a whole lot easier than it might have been otherwise.
Mm.
And there were a couple of other games where there were, you know, where turnovers put a team in a hole, where fumble, Adoree Jackson's fumble on the punt for Tennessee that gave Jacksonville wound up giving Jacksonville a touchdown. But, you know, back to the Jets just for a second.
Yep.
Those two touchdowns. New England still hasn't allowed an offensive touchdown, but those two touchdowns allowed the Jets to cover.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did.
There were cheers in New England.
Yeah. Jarrett Stidham came in and threw a pick six, much to the chagrin of sharps everywhere, all around the country. Vegas let out a collective moan, I think, when that went in. So just quickly, Mike, on the on the Seattle game, just jumping back to that a minute, and to follow your point that, you know, turnovers allow the opposition back in, but so it's bad clock management, and that seems to be another trend at the moment. I mean, it always is with certain coaches, but Pete Carroll getting involved with that, and I don't know whether, and not being facetious, whether the things were connected, that because he got shaken up before the game, whether he had taken his slightly blunted.
Are you implying that Pete Carroll thinks through his nose?
No, I'm not implying that. I just think when he got a ball to the kisser, it might have slightly jarred him. He's like you, I'm like unreconstructed in the Clint Eastwood sense.
Pete and I are, I think, about the same age.
About the same
too.
Age, and you look a lot younger. So there's a lot of similarities there. And I think, he's one of the tough guys. So I don't think it, in that respect, but I think at the same time, you know, anybody going through something like that is going to shake you up just because it's not conventional, not your usual game preparation. And he certainly seemed to make some odd decisions, particularly with regards to clock management. So here's my question for you, Mike. Why do certain coaches, Andy Reid, I think, out of the current crop, usually a culprit, the brilliant coach, but struggles at times with clock management. Why do certain coaches make such baffling decisions, particularly now in the modern NFL, where there are so many assistants around them to help ensure that that doesn't happen?
In Andy's case, I've always thought that part of the problem is that he sees his offense in a vacuum, as it were, and he wants to run it the way they run it.
Irrespective of the situation, you mean?
Yeah, he's an old school, not irrespective necessarily, but it takes priority.
Right.
He's a kind of old school West Coast offense guy, although the offense has evolved way beyond that. It's a brilliantly constructed offense, but you know, he still uses scripted plays at the beginning of the game. I think he wants to keep to the rhythm of that offense, and sometimes he ignores the sort of bigger picture of game management, of stopping the clock, of what you want to do. I mean, the most important thing is avoiding putting yourself in the position where you don't get to run the final play. Where you don't have a timeout available, where spiking the ball would result in too much time, or as we've seen happen a number of times in the NFL, guys spike the ball on fourth down without keeping track of where the downs are.
Right.
And, you know, we saw Dick Curl, who had coached the offensive coordinator in Barcelona, was hired by Dick Vermeil. No, by Herm Edwards, I think it was Herm Edwards in the Jets to maybe it was with Vermeil and then by Herm as a clock coach. You know, his job was to sort of be there on the sidelines in the head coach's ear, telling him what to do in that clock situation. Yeah. And now I personally, and this is kind of a view, I would like to take away the sidelines timeout in the NFL at least once the team is over center or once the center's hands are on the ball. Now, I know that in the NFL now, they come up to line and then everybody starts waving their hands one way or the other and yelling down and signaling and stuff. But at some point, I get really tired of plays starting and then being blown dead because there's been a timeout from the sidelines.
Right.
And I really think that clock management in that sense should belong to the quarterback as it used to do. Although that's kind of going – because quarterbacks now – or so, you know, the plays are called from the sidelines for the most part. They're not the field generals that they once were. But I wouldn't mind going back to that sort of thing. And we were talking about it in another sense on that remarkable comeback in week two where, you know, was the timeout called by the quarterback with 1 second to play? Do they get the wide receiver or whatever, or was it called from the sidelines? Because when it's called from the sidelines, obviously it takes a while to get into the field. So I just don't like the concept.
Yeah, interesting thoughts. And it doesn't surprise me that clock management has reared its head already this season. It seems to be a perennial issue for the most experienced coaches in the league. So I'm sure we'll be getting into that once again later on in the season. I am Mike. I'm going to dive into the mailbag because we've got your top five as well, which I'm looking forward to. I'm sure you're all set for that, right?
Hey, that's like what the news quiz where they say, does anyone have a clipping that they brought in with them? And nobody's ever said, yes, your producer handed me one just before you asked for a top five and lo and behold, Ollie suggested the subject and we have it.
Looking forward to that. We'll get into that in a moment, but plenty in the mailbag for you. So let's route through a few of these. Here's a good one. Ian Waterton. Thanks for this, Ian. How excited should Giants fans be getting about Daniel Jones? Could the hype get on top of him, particularly in a city like New York? Hopefully.
In New York? The hype?
Really?
Never.
No.
I'd say wait till he has a bad game. Wait till he throws two interceptions in the first quarter and then see what the New York Post has to say about it. What impressed me in his performance was that he survived the shaky bits. Play well in the pressure situations.
Yeah.
And he provides an element of mobility. He provides a sort of familiarity with the quicker pass release system. I think he's a better fit for what Shurmur wants to do. I think what the Giants need, and Shurmur's another guy from that Andy Reid school, you know, it would be really nice if the Giants could dig up a receiver who was a deep threat. who could open up some pass patterns underneath. And, you know, I just don't know where they would find one, you know, kind of like an Odell Beckham type player. But I don't know how the Giants would ever come up with an Odell Beckham type player.
Good point. Very good point. But hey, Jones, Golden Tate's coming back though. Golden Tate's not that guy.
Golden Tate is a slot receiver, basically. And they've already got a couple of those. I thought Jones, looked remarkably composed, which was great, because that was kind of one of the question marks about him. And remember that the whole controversy over Jones was not that he wasn't a first round quality quarterback. It was that the Giants took him with the 6th pick rather than the 17th pick. Dave Gettleman, whether he was right or wrong, suggested that he wanted Jones as his next quarterback, and he wasn't prepared to take the risk that he would still be there at 15.
I've got no problem with that, Mike.
I did to an extent, but basically I did because I wasn't convinced that Jones was going to be, an automatic franchise quarterback, but Gettleman was, and the argument is a good one, you know, and now it comes down to your judgment. It's kind of like, and I know we're going to talk a little bit about, play calling decisions. You have to judge the decision and not the outcome. Outcome bias is easy for anybody. But you have to respect that decision that this was the guy they wanted. They went and got him. Now the question is, Dave, can you evaluate a quarterback? And on the basis of one game, the answer would be, yeah.
He's nailing it. Yeah. We spoke a lot about the Amari Cooper deal as well. I think there are parallels there that everybody, you know, all the talking heads shouted at what an absurd deal it was for the Cowboys, but situationally it made a lot of sense for them. If the upside played out, which it did.
Yeah, this morning people were screaming about Pittsburgh tanking the season because they traded a 5th-round draft pick to Seattle for Nick Vannett, a tight end, because I think Vance McDonald has injury problems. And trading a 1st-rounder for Minka isn't tanking your season at all. You know, Minka's had a great game. He made one bad mistake, but he had a couple of really great plays for Pittsburgh. He's going to be a great fit for that team.
Yeah, fair point. All right, I'm going to go back to the mailbag on Jalen Ramsey because we're getting a lot of buzz about Jalen Ramsey. Of course, Ramsey this week, we're recording this Wednesday, of course, hasn't turned up to practice, blaming flu, which make of that what you will. Mike, you and I have worked together. Oh my goodness, 12, 13 years? You've never missed a show with flu. Jalen Ramsey disappointed in you on that one, but I think there's probably more to that than meets the eye, although he is reported to be returning to practice today.
I think he's got the AB virus.
Is that what it is? It was been hanging around with Sam Darnold possibly as well. A lot of you getting in touch with us about Jalen. Here's one from Otto. Otto.
My name is Otto. I like to get blasted.
Cracking name. So,
who said that?
Is that Animal House?
No, it's the bus driver on the Springsteens, on the Simpsons.
Oh, the Simpsons. Okay.
Otto is the bus driver.
Wasn't there a John Belushi character called Otto?
My grandfather was called Otto.
Otto. Was he? Oh, yeah, of course he was. Yeah. Well, okay. So Otto definitely gets the win in terms of the Jalen question. He says, if you guys had the decision, would you, as the 49ers front office, make the trade for Ramsey? And if so, what would be the limit in picks you would go to?
That's an interesting question. Yeah, I think I would not go to that. I might even hesitate to go to one.
What?
Simply because the Niners defense may be good enough without him. Now, if Akello Witherspoon is out, then I might consider it because they were quite smart, I think, when they picked up Jason Verrett from San Diego. You know, and Verrett is a top class quarterback, except that he's always injured every year. He gets injured. He came in when Witherspoon went out, and they immediately attacked him, and he had no defense for it. He looked like a guy who was, you know, coming off a serious knee injury and you know, didn't have the lateral quickness and recovery speed to play. So I don't know. Again, I don't know. I haven't checked injuries, the Witherspoon's injury. But if Witherspoon's out, then I think he's worth a 1st-round draft pick. If you could argue that you can never have too many good corners, but that's not true because you can because you could only play 3 at once.
He's out for a month, Mike Witherspoon. So at least a month.
And in that case, I think one 1st-rounder is good. I don't think I would go with two for him. So definitely, I think in that case, I would do the one. I think two may be too much. And you might see him go for a one plus something else in the following draft, but not a second one. I don't think San Francisco could afford that.
I go two ones for Ramsey, no doubt, but there you go. All right. One more for us, Mike, and then you can give us your top five. Lee Wakefield. Love this. Thanks for the question, Lee, at the NC show. If you want to follow suit, we've all seen Mike Leach talking about college mascots and who would win in the Pac-12 battle. So, but which mascot would win in the eyes of Nat and Mike? So the Pac-12 mascots, you have Benny Beaver, Butch T. Cougar. I'm not going to do them all, but Ralphie the Buffalo, Wilbur and Wilmer, I like the look of, who were the official mascots at the University of Arizona.
Is that Wilmer Tustin. Flintstone?
No, it looks like two wild. Well, logically, two wild.
Yeah, Wildcats. Yeah.
They've got an advantage straight away because they're a tag team, and look like they could be a heel tag team as well. So maybe Wilmer and Wilbur could be my pick. Who are you going for, Mike?
I like the Cougars, to be honest. Although if I were going to have one as a pet, I'd go with the Washington Huskies.
Right.
I don't think the USC Trojan is going to have much of a chance against most of these animals. You know?
No, I think he's like, looking at the Vegas book here. He's a 33-1
long shot. But is he mounted? If he's on the horse, that's a different story.
Is he armed as well? I think we need this clarified. All right. Well, thanks for that question. Love that. We should have more of those. More of those, please, gang. So, Lee, you are the winner of our favorite question of the season so far. Keep those coming in. At the NC show, as I say, all week long, Alex, Tom and the guys on social media will be picking those up and banking them for the mailbag on Wednesday with me and the big man. Right, Mike, your top five, drum roll, please.
Oh,
what was that? That wasn't a drum roll.
Oh, no, just a second. Talking about Mike Leach.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
Talking about Mike Leach, I segued into air raid kind of offenses and Kevin Sumlin at Texas A&M. Who was in that family of air raid kind of coaches, because the one thing that nobody seemed to be talking about in the Carolina-Arizona game was that Kyler Murray was at Texas A&M
yes.
at exactly the same time as Kyle Allen. And Allen had won the job when he came as a freshman. The guy who was then the quarterback immediately transferred out because college football is all about academic success and not playing football.
Of course.
And then Murray came in and they wound up competing and Murray won the competition. And so Allen announced that he was going to transfer out and he transferred to Houston. And then a week later, Murray transferred out to Oklahoma, leaving Kevin Sumlin with neither of them. But this was this game. Was basically an extension of their practice battles at Texas A&M. Right. And this time, Allen won.
Who would you take now? Talk about overreaction to Kyle Allen after one game.
Well, Allen, Allen played last year, and we talked about it on the radio because he looked really good.
Yeah.
He came in one game and then started the second, and he looked composed. He looked really good. I think he's actually someone that Carolina might consider, going forward with if Cam's injury is really serious and he decides to stop playing. I don't think he would be panic stations in Carolina. Murray is obviously a work in progress and the question remains, it was at the beginning of the season, whether Cliff Kingsbury's system is going to limit his progress or whether he, once they get into it, it's going to show his real skills. But right now they're really dependent on his running ability. And I don't know if that's a long-term formula for success.
True that. All right, good stuff, Mike. Now, your top five, we kind of teased it at the top, really, with our story, my favorite Carson story ever, with some idiots throwing basketballs, because, of course, the top five this week is Iron Mike's top five media meltdowns.
Right.
Iron Mike's top five media meltdowns.
Yeah, and it's, there was a lot of criticism of Bill Belichick this week for not being more expansive about the Antonio Brown situation. But note that you don't have Bill Belichick in any of these media meltdown kind of things. His best meltdown that I can remember would not directed at the officials, because there's been a couple of good ones with that. What was when he smashed the Microsoft Surface tablet that the NFL had required them to use and basically said, I can't do this anymore. And Microsoft actually actually issued a corporate statement about it.
Amazing. But now, anyway, Mike, have you got five this week?
I've got five.
Not
yeah.
six or seven.
I can give you as many as you want. Yeah. But we've got Jerry Burns of the Minnesota Vikings, who has, mm-hmm. you can find it on YouTube. It's a F-bomb laced thing in a game that they won, but there was a lot of criticism of Bob Schnelker, his offensive coordinator. And he basically refused to throw Schnelker under a bus and did it very pointedly. At number four, you've got Herm Edwards, the famous, you play to win the game. Hello? You know, I don't care if you don't get any wins. And that was somebody asking the wrong question of Herm at the wrong time.
Have you ever been in that situation, Mike, in a presser where you've incurred the wrath of the head coach?
No. Although I did ask Bill one at the Super Bowl in 2007 when I still got to go to the game in enough time for the coach's press conference as opposed to parachuting into the stadium just before the opening ceremony. Yeah. But Bill just said, "Hey, Mike."
That's right. Yeah.
Number three is Mike Ditka. And Ditka is just, it's an amazing, you can go online again and you can find lots of Mike Ditka. And the most famous one is after a loss to Atlanta and guy says, "Why are you in such a bad mood?" He goes, "What do you care?" If you were 2-7, you'd be in a bad mood too.
I'm with Coach Ditka.
And then they're asking him, and he says, "There's not much talent on the offense. You know, that's my fault. You know, I pick these guys. I have to, you know, I have to be responsible for it. I'm embarrassed for them, but you can't blame the players. It'd be hypocritical." He says, "God put me there to be humbled, and I deserve it." Ditka was really honest, and if you go through a lot of his clips, you'll find he gives sometimes angry but very honest answers to the press, you know, and treats them like a situation. When you hear him say something like, "It broke me down today," you really feel for the guy.
Right.
Because he was an emotional player, and obviously he's an emotional coach as well.
There's a great Football Life on Ditka, which is well worth.
Yeah, I'm old enough to remember him as a college player at Pitt. Mm. And he was just
no
so
nonsense.
Tough.
Yeah.
On those teams. Pitt-Syracuse was a big game in those days. At number two, and another guy with multiple entries, is Jim Mora, of course. Because this is a guy who said things like, "And they were vomiting in the stands watching this game," or "We were diddly-poo out there." But the famous one, those were both in New Orleans. The famous one was when he was with the Colts, and they'd lost to the 49ers, and someone asked him if they thought they could make the playoffs. And Mora went, "Playoffs?"
That's a good impression of Mora.
Holy crap. I don't know. Are you kidding me? Jim Mora is like the combination of incredulity and anger is what puts that at number two. But number one, and I think everyone's going to know what number one is, it's Dennis Green. When he was coaching in Arizona, and they blew a 23-3 lead to the Bears. This is when the Bears went to the Super Bowl with Rex Grossman at quarterback and Kyle Orton during the season. And he said, you know, they said, "You know, what did they do that fooled you," or something like that. And he said, "Yeah, what, you want to crown them champions? They are who we thought they were. We let them off the hook. They are who we thought they were." And someone said, "Did you think you can beat them?" Which was exactly the wrong question to ask at that point. And he said, "You know, that's why we took the damn field."
Does he end it by
that's the frustration.
The
that's the ultimate frustration, Rick.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, it's basically when a coach knows that everything that could possibly go wrong has gone wrong, and you know, you can't even think about what's the best way to move forward from that, resurrect the situation. It's just gone.
Cracking stuff. I and Mike at Carlson Sports is how you can follow the big man on Twitter, and of course the Patreon column as well. Give that a plug. What's going on this week on it?
I may do 10 takeaways from the week today if I get time to write it. Nice. Otherwise, on Thursday, there's a pick of the game. On Friday, there's picks and analysis of all 15 games. And we're currently running at a pretty good pace, so that's good in terms of doing it right. But last week, there were a couple of shockers there in the second window of games, you know, yes. And that's what makes the NFL the NFL.
Indeed it does. Patreon.com/ Mike Carlson FMTE is how
that's
you get involved
it.
With that.
Absolutely.
And it drops into your inbox as and when a new article is published. So get involved, gang. Get stuck in with that. Back next week. Enjoy the game this weekend, Mike. We'll chat to you then.
Okay. Thanks, man.
See you, mate.
Go long! Go long!
Sometimes longer isn't better. So if you're looking for a fantasy NFL game that doesn't last all season, try Paddy Power Fantasy. Every game week is a season in itself. Try it for free on our super short, super free contest on this Sunday's 6 p.m. games. The top 1,500 customers in the contest win a prize with £1,000 for first place. Search Paddy Power Fantasy to pick your team. Paddy Power Fantasy. Hate waiting. Love winning. Paddy Power Fantasy rules apply. 18+.
Cracking stuff from Ian. Mike, he will be back, of course, next Wednesday for more deep diving all across the NFL. Plenty more where that came from. We'll check in with Ben Mortimer a little bit later on, travel expert, who's going to get us up to speed on making the trip across the pond to go and watch a game, which I'm sure a lot of you will be interested in working out how to do that. So Ben is your man to talk about that. But next up, a regular on the show, an all-pro member of the Nat Coombs Show. It is, of course, the great Ben Isaacs. Ben Isaacs, good to have you on, man.
Yeah, good to be on. How's it going?
Well, importantly, Mike and I were just talking about the Mike Leach Pac-10 mascot fight situation. Have you seen that story?
No, I've not seen this.
Well, he was suggesting and speculating on who would win between, I think it was a fight or a race. I should probably be clear. But anyway, Mike and I turned it into a fight.
It is a fight. I've just checked it out. This is such a Mike Leach thing. The guy is absolutely bonkers. I would love to see him in the NFL. I mean, he would be drummed out of the NFL within about 3 weeks because he's so crazy. But
it's automatically my favorite college head coach ever.
Yeah.
We were speculating. Just a quick hot take from you, Ben, as our college expert. I fancied Wilbur and Wilmer because of the tag team. element there, and I figured that Wilma looks as though, you know, she's a pleasant kind of wildcat, but I reckon she could go quite dark, could go quite rogue in a fight. So I'm going there with them. Have you got an opinion on this?
Well, I met a few pleasant wildcats in my time. I want to go with USC's Trojan because the dude does have a weapon. Yeah. But on the other
Stanford hand, tree, Stanford's mascot is a tree.
I mean, you know, the trees live longer than any other kind of living thing in terms of the Pac-12 mascots. I'm thinking, right, like you've got huskies, you've got ducks, you've got bears, you've got sun devil, which isn't a real thing, but I wouldn't really want to be in a fight with a sun devil.
Fair point.
So yeah, I mean, maybe the Stanford tree is a pretty cool kind of like your left field choice because I mean, I don't know if any of the other mascots have a weapon that could cut down the tree. So the tree might win by the Trojan.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we got that key hot take from you right at the top. Now, a lot changing at the top of the leaderboard in college football. What does that mean for the players? And I want to talk about Wisconsin destroying Michigan. And that is a fair definition, isn't it?
I think that is fair.
Blowout. So Harbaugh must be in all heaps of trouble as well. So talk us through what's been going on over the last week.
Well, Michigan losing to Wisconsin is probably the big one. And this wasn't an absolutely outrageous upset because Wisconsin are a really good team. It's just that Michigan had legitimate playoff aspirations to win the Big Ten and be selected as one of the four playoff teams. But this loss, although it doesn't ruin their chances because they can still win the conference, and winning the conference may in itself be enough to get into the playoffs, but they'll now need to win every game and look good while doing it. If they're squeaking past weaker teams, the selection committee are just going to discard them. Wisconsin looked like the team most likely to challenge Ohio State in that conference. It was thought it's kind of Michigan or Ohio State. Maybe it's a toss up, but Wisconsin now will think, okay, well, we can run the table. We could beat Ohio State and we could be in the playoff. They've got Jonathan Taylor, who may be the best running back in the nation too. So I'm really high on Wisconsin now after being high on Michigan, I'm completely flip-flopping and I'm going to
I love
forget.
That. I love I'm the fact that wait for them to blow Michigan out of the water and now you're big on them. You're just playing the hot hand. We don't expect anything less from you, Ben Isaac. Now, after that remarkable UCLA-Washington State game last week, which game should we keep an eye out for on ESPN this weekend?
Here we go. I'm going to say my favorite game is the 5 p.m. Texas A&M versus Arkansas at Jerry World in Arlington. I think that could get wild. That's 5 o'clock. But a really under the radar one.
Wild as in shootout wild?
Wild shootout. Because, I don't trust the Arkansas defense and it's a good rivalry game. Neutral field. It'll be a great atmosphere. That I'm looking forward to. And right after that, Clemson, North Carolina, which I always like watching Clemson, but usually that game's over at halftime. But also at 8:30 is Coastal Carolina, Appalachian State. Mm. Now, Appalachian State beat North Carolina, last week. Here's a good way to tell which games fans are really excited about. When you go on, the ESPN website for the schedule. Now, if you go on the ESPN UK website, you'll see the UK times for the kickoffs. And
you are a company man, Ben.
This is useful information because for a long time I was always defaulting to the US one, and the kickoff times obviously weren't accurate, and it wouldn't tell me which games were on ESPN Play. It was all the networks. You go on the UK one and you look at the schedule, then you can see everything that you can see.
Nice.
It also tells you what, if you were buying the tickets now, what they would cost you. And the most expensive ticket of the entire weekend in college football is Coastal Carolina at Appalachian State.
Wow,
because it is such a good rivalry game. And both these teams pull up a lot of points. And it's really exciting. So there you go. Ultra left field choice. Coastal Carolina, Appalachian State, 8:30, ESPN player. Book it in. And if I'm wrong, don't at me.
Lock it in. Love that. One more for you quickly. It is a flyby from you this week, Ben. But I want to ask about the 2020 draft, which we're going to talk to you a lot about. And as the pieces move around and mock drafts change all the time, we love an overreaction on the show, as you well know.
Oh, I love a hot take.
Love a hot take. I think we had some interesting hot takes a couple of weeks back that if you go 0-2, then the season's in trouble.
Stuff like that.
Dynamite, stuff like that. But Daniel Jones is definitely the current holder of the overreaction storyline of the NFL right now. So let's take him and project that forwards to the 2020 draft. Which quarterback are people underestimating in the 2020 draft? So not the hot takes, not Tua and everybody else that everyone's talking about, but quarterbacks that might end up getting picked higher than we figured or coming into the NFL and surprising people by getting a start early on and looking like they belong.
Well, obviously, a lot of that does depend on who picks them. And you just never know, kind of, it might be a team with an established starter and someone gets injured. But obviously, we know that Tua and Justin Herbert are kind of considered to be locked in for the first round. There's a guy that I like who's really crept up just this season. Joe Burrow is quarterback of LSU. LSU have not had a good quarterback since I don't know when. And he's changed that offense. People didn't expect too much out of him. People weren't looking at him as like, oh yeah, this guy is a great pro prospect. But the way that he's played this year, he's been so accurate. The way he's managed that offense, he's thrown 11 touchdowns, only 2 interceptions. He looks better every single week and he's had tough games as well. Now he's got some pretty good receivers, but there was a particular play, I want to say 3rd and 17, against Texas, where he was just surrounded by blitzers and he just elegantly moved out of the way, hit the receiver in stride, 61-yard touchdown. It's perhaps his quintessential play. You can probably YouTube it. He seems like he's a good improviser. He's getting better every week and he could go anywhere between the first round and the fifth round.
Mm.
But I think someone could get a real bargain with him if he doesn't go in the first round. He may end up going onto a good team rather than one of the worst teams. And if he gets his chance with a good supporting cast, he could be a star. Hot
Super
take.
Stuff. I love that hot take. That is excellent work. And a fine way to wrap up this week's guest spot. But of course, Ben, a regular part of our show all season long. And we will be having him in studio very, very soon to deep dive a little bit more on important things in life, like mascot fights. Ben, look after yourself at Tweets from Ben if you want to follow him, as you should, on Twitter. We'll see you soon, mate.
Cheers. See you soon.
Ben Isaacs there, giving us a college steer. Let's move on. Our third and final guest of the show. And if you've thought about, ever thought about heading over stateside for a game, for a college game, maybe at Coastal Carolina, Appalachian State, if you could afford the tickets, or an NFL game, well, you're in the right place because our next guest is a travel expert that specializes in just that, taking over British fans to the States and setting them up for games, plural, of their choice. So looking forward to checking in with him and working out how we get that done. Let's say a big hello to Mr. Ben. Ben, great to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me, Nat. How are you?
I am very good. And looking forward to getting into this because obviously a lot of our listeners, some new, brand new to the game this season, some old school going back, going way back into the vaults of time. I guess all share their love of the sport, but because of that minor thing called the Atlantic separating us and the States, haven't necessarily got over to a game stateside. Many of our listeners will have gone to, you know, one of the London games, which are terrific, and we mustn't ever get too complacent about those. But there's nothing like going to a game in America. And of course, that's something you know all about. So I wanted to get some basic tips and steers and ideas from you as somebody who is well versed in this area. Let's start with the idea of maximizing your trip. So if you're heading out to watch your NFL team of choice or an NFL game, I guess a good option is to look around at the college options there too, and try and cram in as much football, even high school too, right? As much football as you can.
Absolutely. I think the more you can, obviously, if you're a fan, the more you can see and experience, the better. I agree with you that college, if you can go to a game, is an amazing experience. I mean, for me, it's about, you know, football in the US is more than just the game. And obviously, having gone to, you know, Wembley or Twickenham, it's there's some fun stuff you can do before a game here. But in the US, it is a sort of another level. It starts at the crack of dawn. Tailgating is, if you can, fairly essential as far as experiencing the whole game.
What's the best tailgate you've ever been to?
Best tailgate I've ever been to. It's tough. As a company, we offer quite a lot, but I lived in Baltimore 10 years and it's quite a hardcore tailgating city anyway. Yeah, so I'd be remiss to not mention, sort of hanging out under the overpass on I-95 outside M&T Bank Stadium. It does produce, but I think the Cleveland do it very well. I mean, they've had some lean years, so they've refined the enjoyable part of the game more than anyone. So they do a great job as well. Obviously Green Bay is fantastic as far as the pros. And then this year, I mean, I've not been to too many college tailgates, but I'm looking forward to going to both Wisconsin and Michigan in November. Wow, and I think those will both be pretty good tailgates.
So what are the best areas, would you say, to double down or triple down if you throw a high school in as well? I guess the South or Texas, I guess, makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, Texas. I mean, you've got those small towns that just live or die by Friday night lights. So, you know, you get a lot of people show up for those games. We went a couple of years ago at a high school game, and it was a playoff game in Louisiana. We were in New Orleans and Baton Rouge for an LSU game the following day. So we went to a high school near Baton Rouge, and they ended up actually winning the championship for their region. And they played at Mercedes-Benz Stadium a month later and won the whole thing. So we're pretty lucky to see them.
But you guys must have been the lucky mascots, right?
Something like that. Well, we were keeping an eye on it. I mean, we were looking at three or four high schools, and we were talking to local guys, and they were saying that these guys are really good. And it was actually that trip is when one of the guys went, we had a journalist with us, and he went up to interview Trevor Lawrence, some kid who was, you know, a high school kid at the time, and now he's going to be probably the number one pick in a year, so, or 2 years. So, but you see, I mean, the level of play at high school, at senior level in those sort of, certainly those competitive Southern teams is, you know, a lot of those teams could probably beat some of the lesser college teams. They're that good.
And what should be on our listeners' bucket list, taking, you know, partisan affiliation with a particular NFL team out of it for a minute, which stadiums and games, and I guess also areas, cities and regions of America, would you really recommend our listeners look at thinking about? What would be on your, you know, your top three, your top five must do?
I think veering away from the typical sort of, you know, sort of British obsession with New York and Florida and stuff is sometimes a good idea, because you've got some fantastic cities that, I guess are less visited in the US that have an NFL team, and they have a great college presence too. So
you're going to drop Detroit right here. That's where
I will put Detroit in, actually. Thanks Nat for reminding me, because we've talked about this firstly, Detroit as a city has really, really sort of turned itself around, in the last, really sort of just 10 years. I mean, it still has its issues with, violence or what happened in certain parts, just like Baltimore, actually, but the urban renovation and redevelopment in that city is very impressive. And obviously, Ford Field's a nice place to see a game. The Lions are actually looking a little tasty all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Last few weeks. And then you've also got Michigan State and Michigan. And there's obviously, you know, diehards from both of those fan bases. So that's a good place in the north, yeah. I suppose. There's less mention. I think, as I said, Southern football's great. I mean, I always have to sort of go with New Orleans, I guess, at the top of my list, because it just ticks all those boxes as far as, you know, outside of the game as well. And then obviously the Superdome is just super loud, and the fans are terrific as well. So
yeah, and with your New Orleans, I remember. I've probably bored our listeners, Ben, so many times with this story, but our new listeners will appreciate it. Me and Mike did a game over there for telly back in the day, New Orleans, the Superdome, on a Monday night football game. We were next to the Monday night football crew in the booth next to them, and it was a glass partition kind of frontage. So we were half exposed to the fans outside, as opposed to being in a completely self-contained booth that you often are in stadiums. Single-handedly, the best atmosphere I've ever been in, and particularly accentuated by Carlson at various stages of the game and the broadcast, inciting a riot, getting the fans to join in various songs. I mean, it was absolutely wild, and what a hell of a city as well. So I'm loving that. And I'm loving the Michigan steer too. That is definitely on my bucket list to go and see them, because that is an extraordinary, 105,000, is it, the stadium?
I think it's a little more. It's about 108. I think it's the biggest football stadium in the United States. And yeah. I looked this up. It's the second biggest stadium in the world as far as capacity. And I was surprised. Do you know where the first, maybe?
South America, I'm guessing.
It's Pyongyang, North Korea, which I doubt the veracity of that claim. He may be exaggerating.
No, a little bit.
But
I'm guessing you've never covered a game there. and what about the Super Bowl, of course, in Miami? So there's a very realistic chance this season that we're going to see a host city with their team in the Super Bowl, right? The way the Finns are going.
Oh, yeah. I think they're just setting everyone up for the fall here. You know, they're going to come back strong.
It's like Paul Newman in The Color of Money. That's what's going on.
That's it. It's Josh Rosen's full home debut this weekend, isn't it? So I think the turnaround starts here. But, it's not looking likely, but I think that Miami's, there's a reason the NFL keep going back there so many times. It's hosted it, I think, more than any other city, and it's just because it's so much fun. You know, the weather's great. You can pretty much guarantee, well, I'm going to curse myself here, but, you know, a nice weather for the game.
Oh, you've jinxed it now.
I hope we don't, because we've got 15 people going today.
Cracking stuff, Ben. So touchdowntrips.com is where you head to find out more about everything that Ben and his crew do on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as well, Touchdown Trips. And we are going to be definitely talking more about this. Delighted that they are supporting the show this season. We have got lots of different ideas and things we want to get into in terms of traveling stateside, city guides, bars to go to, restaurants to check out, places to visit, all that good stuff. We're going to be weaving that in throughout the course of the season here on the Nat Coombs Show. So we'll be hearing from Ben soon. And appreciate your insight today, man. Good to have you on.
Thanks for having me, Nat. Cheers.
The excellent Ben Mortimer there from Touchdown Trips. As I say, www.touchdowntrips.com. Cracking stuff. Many thanks to all our guests. Iron Mike leading us off. We had Ben Isaacs with the College Steer. Get involved with ESPN Player this weekend. I'll certainly be watching from 5 o'clock onwards. Sounds like that's going to be an absolute thriller from what Benny said. So love the fact that you can just double down, have college football on a Saturday, NFL on a Sunday. What is not to love about that? And big thanks to Ben Mortimer as well. Really finding out a lot more about how you plan a trip stateside and really getting my imagination going, and hopefully yours as well with things you can do. We're back Friday with a weekend preview, of course, at the ESPN studios. So looking forward to getting stuck into week four of the NFL, getting you set for the weekend. Me and the OG back on Saturday as well for the Daily Fantasy Pod. Big shout out to our sponsors, Paddy Power Fantasy. Really appreciate their support and love this season. And if you haven't, just a reminder, subscribe to us. That way you won't miss any of these great episodes that are dropping into your podcatcher. They will automatically appear for the commute home, if you're at the gym, or if you're rocking back after a heavy night out at about 4 o'clock. That's often the best way to listen to this show, quite frankly. So at the NC Show on social media. We'll see you Friday. Bye for now.